Hi, I'm Serena.
And I'm Haley, and this is
The Bold on the Big Screen. So welcome to our third episode of The Bold on the Big Screen. Today we will be talking about the super new movie Tar. It came out, I think, a couple weeks ago. It was written and directed by Todd Field, and it stars Cate Blanchett as Lydia Tar, Nina Hoss as Sharon Goodnow, and Noemi Merlant as Francesca Lentini. And we'll go into the summary.
All right, I'm going to get into the summary of this film, and as usual, I'm going to go ahead and give everyone a spoiler warning, just because we are going to be talking about the entire plot of this movie and some of the details that do get revealed as the movie goes on. There isn't really, like, a huge spoiler or big, like, plot twist at all, but if you do want to see the movie before, you know, you find out some of those, like, detailed nuances, I would recommend doing that before you listen to what we have to say. So to start with the summary, Tar is a character study film about fictional character Lydia Tar, who, like Serena said, is played by Cate Blanchett. She is a famous female orchestra conductor who has made many crowning achievements throughout her career as a figure in music. The movie focuses on Tar as she puts together an orchestral performance of Mahler's Fifth Symphony. It is yet another pivotal moment of her outstanding career. However, what happens behind closed doors cannot be hidden forever. Certain details about the way Tar has acted towards and engaged with some of her previous students and protégés in the past begins to catch up with her as the public and the music community learn about some of her questionable behavior. As she grapples with the stress of her work, her personal life, and her past, Tar must face the consequences of her actions amidst one of the biggest defining moments of her career. Do you want to get started with initial thoughts?
Yeah. So Haley and I went to go see this. I think it was the latest showing. It was 8:30, which obviously you sit through trailers, so it didn't start until 9. So we ended up leaving like a little bit past 11:30 in the evening, and I think I was a little tired watching this.
Just a little?
I was a little tired. And the movie itself, because it is a slow burn, it's kind of draining in a way. So when it finally ended, I was kind of like, damn, I don't know if I, like, liked it. I was like, it was something, for sure.
Absolutely.
But it's very complex, very long. And I kind of wrote here, I said, I think it's something that you need to see twice to truly understand the nuances of it. So I said, prepare to give up about 5 hours of your life and a lot of thinking to truly understand the complexities of this movie.
Yeah, I don't think I could have said it better myself. We saw it, we didn't even see it on like a weekend. We saw it on a weekday after like a whole day of classes and
Tuesday
work.
Night.
Yeah, it was like an 18-hour day for us basically.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we were both exhausted. And I think even just like the last half hour, I was like sitting in that chair and I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And that's on us. I mean, we just, that's
absolutely
just the only time we could find to go see it, which is fine. But
and $6 Tuesdays.
Yeah, we saved some money as well.
So, you know.
I don't know if my mind was really ready for this movie in the moment. I think having sat on it for the time that we've been able to sit on it before recording this episode, I feel better now about it. And we're going to talk about all the details and everything.
Right.
And I think you actually said this when we were walking out of the theater. It's just, it's one of those movies that you have to think.
You really do.
When you're watching it. Like, you can't just mindlessly watch this movie. It takes a lot of brain energy.
Yeah.
To, like, understand what's going on. And, to, like, you have to pay attention and you have to listen and you have to really think when you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot to take in. And we definitely had to sit on it. But here we are. And
yeah.
So we got... We're ready, but I totally agree with you. I really, really want to see this movie again because I don't think I'll be able to fully appreciate it until I sit through it a whole second time.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why I think it's something that you really need to think about is because at face value, the movie is pretty simple. You know, it's a composer who does something bad and faces the consequences of it, as most narrative kind of goes through that arc. But you can tell throughout the entire movie that there are little things, little symbols and different motifs that you have to dissect. And you can't do that in real time, so you really have to think about it, see it a few times. But, yeah.
Yeah, there's more details in it than you realize when you're watching it for the first time.
Absolutely.
And then having seen it, the entirety of it, and, like, as you're reflecting on the viewing experience, you're like, man, I really need to pay closer attention to that part of the movie
exactly. The
second time I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally agree.
But, the next day, I had to go to work that morning, and it was so slow at work. So all I could think about was the movie. And I was like, if I'm spending hours just thinking about this movie, then it's got to be good. And like, even since then, I've just been thinking about the movie, reading reviews, getting mad at reviews. It really is. That's how you know that it's a good film, is if you can't stop thinking about it and can't stop trying to figure it out.
So we should get into then the things that we liked.
Yeah, which I have quite a bit.
Yeah, my first bullet point just says Lydia Tarr.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Lydia Tarr as a character is everything we love and also everything we hate. And it's just the perfect... You go through so many emotions about her. Nobody can deny that she's a freaking genius. Like, there mm-hmm. are points when you're watching her that you're just, like, in awe of her. And I just remember being like, wow, this woman is a genius. She's an artist. She's amazing. And you can't deny that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, you also kind of hate her as a person. And so you're in this weird... Like, I don't know about you, but I would go see a Lydia Tarr performance.
Oh, no, me too.
Like, I want to see... Yeah.
Absolutely.
And another thing I really loved about her character and just this movie in general is she is just obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely obsessed with her craft, with her art. And I think art is so much about obsession. It's really... Every type of art is about being consumed by something wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And I think that Lydia Tarr is the perfect representation of being totally and completely consumed by her art. And, you know, that obsession can lead to some really bad things.
Right.
And I think that's what we see in this movie. And it's just, it's done so well. And, I mean, yeah, Lydia Tarr, a character I will never forget.
Exactly.
In my life.
And I think what's also unique about her is... Maybe in the beginning 15 minutes she's portrayed as a good person, but she's not a hero in any way. She's never portrayed as a morally good person. I mean, I think in the first 30 minutes we learn that she stole Sharon's pills, her wife, her poor wife who has a heart condition.
Right.
She takes all of her pills and takes them herself. But it's so strange because we see that, which is so toxic and terrible, but we still love her because we don't know about what she's, like, really done bad yet. We're just like, oh, Lydia, you're so interesting. We want to know more about what you're doing.
God, she's but so even, smart.
And we love her to the point that it's painful when we learn just how flawed she is. And we're like, disappointing
to us. It ruins
it.
It's like, oh, I had so much, like, I loved her, and then all mm-hmm. of that is just destroyed because, I mean, you learn... like what who she actually is, and I think, like, I don't know if it's the first scene, but it's the talk show scene, which is like mm-hmm. way at the beginning, and it gives us that initial taste of what she's like under the spotlight.
Exactly.
And it makes you fall in love with her because she's so smart and she says so many profound and amazing things, and she's a
yes.
likable figure. But, you know, as we know about the real world, what we see on talk shows and on TV is not what actually somebody is. And so our first introduction to her is through that perspective where we're like, wow, she's amazing. She's a genius. But that is the perfect image of her that she wants everyone to see of her. And
mm-hmm.
then as the film goes on, we get the real Lydia Tarr and we realize she is flawed and she's basically just a bad person.
Exactly. She is. And I don't know. I think that just makes her character so unique because I don't think we see a lot of women in film in this kind of role. I mean, I think the only other one I can think of that's remotely close is, what is her name? In Gone Girl. It's that kind of like anti-hero, you know what I mean? Where it's like you know that she's like bad.
Yes.
But you love her anyway. Obviously, Lydia Tarr is like not as intentional on murdering people, but, you know, I guess she only murdered one person in Gone Girl. Spoiler alert. Sorry. Anyway. Sorry to anyone who's never seen Gone Girl.
Sorry, this is also a spoiler warning.
It's Gone Girl. Anyway, my first bullet point is the beginning sequence, which, like, the credits.
Oh, my God.
The credits were so unique in this because the credits play first. Instead of playing at the end, I think they play at the end, too, but they also play in the beginning. And they have
For a long time.
Yeah, this, like, indigenous singer singing in the background. But it's almost like the credits are played backwards. You have the least important, I hate saying it that way, lack of a better word, the least important people who are part of the crew in the beginning, and then it goes all the way until it says, produced by Cate Blanchett, starring Cate Blanchett, and then directed by Todd Field, and then it says, I don't know if it has the title card, Tarr, but then you just see
I think
Lydia.
It does. I think it has the title.
And it's long. I don't even know how long that that sequence was. It was maybe 5 minutes long.
Yeah, it's long. And I was reading, I didn't even catch this, I can't take the credit for this, but I was reading a review that was like, in orchestra and music, the conductor is kind of the leader, but that doesn't mean that the conductor is the most important player in the game. And so something like orchestra requires teamwork from every single person who's playing an instrument, the conductor who's sort of like making sure everyone is in tune, is on the same wavelength, whatever. And a movie is just like that, right? The director and the like lead actor or actress and the producer are not the only ones that come together and make that movie what it is.
Exactly.
And I think the themes of this movie as something about ego and about power and about stealing the limelight, it was great for them to put those credits in the beginning to be like, hey, look, this is what actually goes into making something like this. And everybody needs equal recognition, not just the one person who seems to be the most recognized.
I know. And I agree with everything you said. And I admire it, too, because you know for a fact when the credits roll in a movie theater, you leave. You know what I mean? You're not watching all the way until the art director on the last slide of credits. You know what I mean? You're not waiting the entire time, so you were kind of forced to see everybody who was involved, which
this
I thought
movie
was
is
really
saying
cool.
No, you're gonna appreciate every single person that put effort into this movie before you even get to see it,
I think. And also I was thinking about it, I was like, damn, there's a lot of people who go into making a movie. And I think that also made me realize why movies are so expensive to make now, because there was like 300 people in those credits.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's such a small little thing, but
it is.
It's a big thing, really.
Very unique. What is your next bullet point?
I enjoyed, you know, this movie tells a story about obsession, about ego, about power, and about consequences. Mm-hmm. And it does a really good job of showing us that nobody is exempt from the consequences of their actions.
Right.
And I think, for me, that was, like, the biggest, call it a takeaway, I guess. And also, with that idea, because it is kind of a broad story, but they chose to make this about music and about orchestra, and I am so glad that that's what they chose to tell this story through. You know, we could have seen this through any type of lens, because people like Lydia Tarr exist in every profession, in art, in science, in business, and everywhere. But the choice to do it through classical music, I think, was a great choice, because music is so powerful, music is so emotional, and it's fucking intense.
It is.
And this movie is intense.
It is.
So blending those two ideas together was just amazing. I think they matched the themes really well, and I think it was very well executed. There was a couple times that I, like, jumped in my seat, because it would be, like, a really quiet scene, and then it would cut to her conducting, and it would be, like, a really loud moment in the music, and it makes you jump.
It was.
And it's those intense moments that I think really shine in this movie.
Yeah, and I think, in general, the sound engineering for this movie, beyond the music, beyond all of that, was really, really smart. Because there were sometimes in the film where you're watching Lydia sleeping in bed, and you can hear, like, that white noise from, like, behind you, but then all of a sudden you hear the banging on the door, and it's only on the right side.
Yes.
And you think that somebody's banging on the theater.
Exactly.
And it startles you just like it would startle Lydia. Or there was the metronome did the same thing. It was in the right channel. And you look over there like, what? So you have the same reaction as Lydia when she's having these moments where she hears dissonant sounds out of nowhere. It feels like you're really watching this.
And the other thing about sound and about the whole concept of this movie and music is, you know, they didn't overuse music.
No.
They only used it at specific moments, and it was just very well thought out. You know, for a movie about music, there's a lot of, like, very quiet moments that don't have music in them, but then that makes the moments that do, the big orchestral performances, add so much to the story and become such important parts of the movie. It was just a very strong balance, I think.
You know, it's funny. One of my bullet points literally says, for being a movie about music, there was a lot of uncomfortable silence in this movie.
It was great.
You and I think alike. But yeah, like, especially the conversational scenes, there's no, like, background music. Like, even when they were in the restaurant in the beginning, Lydia and Elliot, I think was his name, you would expect there to be, like, light music playing on, like, the speakers in the restaurant, but there's not. It's just silent, and they're just talking to each other, and it's, like, 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
But for some reason, like, some of the conversation scenes that were 15 minutes long, I was just, like, into it. I was, like, I was there. I was like, oh, yeah. are you guys talking about? I'm here. I'm talking to you guys. But yeah, the sound in this film is incredible, really.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm totally accurate on this, but like thinking back on it, I feel like the only time that there's actual music is when it's coming from the orchestra.
Exactly.
Or when someone's actually playing it, whether it's the piano, the cello, the actual orchestra. I'm pretty sure that's the only time we ever hear music, or at least most of the time that we hear music.
Exactly. We don't ever... I know there's a word for this, when music is being played in a film rather than like outside of the film as a score. What is the word for that? Oh, I learned this.
It's diegetic versus non-diegetic.
Yeah, so whichever and, of those...
Oh my gosh, I should know this. That's embarrassing. I'm pretty sure diegetic is when it's in the movie, so like a character is playing the piano and you hear it, and non-diegetic is when it's like added in post.
Yep. So there is no non-diegetic.
Yeah.
It's all
which hats
genius.
Off. Amazing.
Genius.
Wonderful.
What else did I have in mind? I have so many bullet points. It's kind of insane. Anyway, I liked the ending. I didn't like it initially. But as I thought about it, I thought it was kind of genius.
What about it do you like?
I said that it was monotonously bleak. Like, we just watched this whole sequence of her in Southeast Asia, and you're wondering why she's there, what's going on. You can tell that she's not really enjoying herself. She isn't living this lavish lifestyle anymore. But we know that she's still doing her work. So we're like, okay, maybe she's still feeling fulfilled. But then you see her start conducting the orchestra, and it's for basically a Comic-Con. It's for, I can't remember what the video game is called, but it's for a cosplaying event for a video game.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a pretty big fall from grace.
Yeah, honestly. It's a fall from grace. So it's like, I wrote, it isn't tragic or joyful, because it's not just like this, woe is me, my career is over. It's not dramatic. There isn't like a really sad score behind it. It's just kind of like, well, this is your reality now. You ruined your career. But it doesn't show an end. Because like, and we're going to talk more about cancel culture too, but it still leaves room for redemption.
Well, and what I like too is it feels very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have this huge tragic ending that happens.
Right.
But like, it's more realistic this way, and it's almost more tragic
right.
to me, because it's like, wow, this is just so... sad.
Yeah.
Like, that sucks, man. Like, that sucks. Look at where you were and look at where you are now.
I know.
And it's also like, you're kind of like, haha, like you get what you deserve. But she is literally, she's lost everything.
I know.
But she's still conducting. So it's like, it's not the worst thing that could happen to her. But if in her mind, you know, it is. That's the thing.
Or even to me, because I understood that the orchestra she was with, the Berlin, I know it had like a whole fancy name, but that was one of the best symphonies or orchestras in the world that she was the lead conductor for. And
she fucked it all up.
I know she did. And she was an EGOT, everyone. Emmy, what was it? Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and a Tony.
Wow. The other thing, talking about how realistic it is, you know, I feel like in the real world, there's a lot of like celebrities who have quote-unquote been canceled or whatever term we want to use. And they kind of fall out of the limelight. Like, we don't really see them anymore on TV or in media or anything because they've sort of been this quote-unquote canceled. And nobody really knows what happens to them.
Exactly.
But what happens to Lydia makes sense. And seems like something that could totally happen to these kinds of people that go through this similar story where something about their past comes up and we realize that their fame rests on the pain and suffering of others, and society, you know, makes them pay for that. But they, you know, they keep living. They don't like go to prison. They don't die. They continue to live, and we just don't hear about what they're doing.
Exactly.
And so maybe they are out here doing this menial, weird, conducting a Comic-Con. Who knows? And it just feels so realistic to me for her character.
Exactly. You also feel a bit of secondhand embarrassment for her because you know that everybody else she knows in the industry is laughing at her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's humiliating. That's humiliating for her. Like, to the people she looked down upon are now above her.
You're like, yes.
Yeah. Like, justice for Francesca. I hope Francesca became a conductor like she dreamed of. I hope she found a better mentor.
I know.
She deserved better.
Yeah.
Love her.
But yeah, no, I think the ending, I understand why some people are disappointed because mm-hmm. the movie itself is such an intense joyride almost. Right. And then the ending doesn't really give you a huge climactic result.
Exactly.
But I think in hindsight, it's a logical ending and it wraps everything up in a way that makes sense and is realistic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Ooh, what else? Do you have another one?
You kind of mentioned this before mm-hmm. about Lydia Tarr being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I love everything about the fact that this movie is about a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a world when we want to have a well-rounded representation of women, I think it's good to have women characters who are inherently flawed, who are extremely flawed. And I think this is a great story because, you know, you can't deny that Lydia Tarr is a strong woman. It took a lot of strength to get where she did. Unfortunately, a lot of those things were also very immoral. And that type of person, that woman, does actually exist. And it's a story that we deserve to experience and a story that deserves to get told because
exactly.
that type of woman is real. And I thought about it and I was like, man, if this movie, this exact movie or this exact story had been told but about a man,
right.
I would have absolutely hated it.
Right.
I just don't think, I think it spoke to me more as a woman and I think it was a new perspective and a good story to tell. And, you know, we can hate Lydia Tarr as a person while still being grateful that this is a story about a woman.
Yeah.
I don't know, does that make sense?
Exactly. And I think that, I feel like Lydia is, I don't want to call her a hero, but like an anti-hero, you know what I mean? She very much is. And we get a lot of stories where men are in that position, like Mad Men.
Egotistical men who hurt the people below them.
Yeah, but we love them for some reason.
Yeah.
We've never really had that for a woman.
That's
If a woman is the bad guy, they're the bad guy. You know what I mean? There's nothing to like about them. But I think that this film makes us admire Lydia and things like that. And I think that her as a character, too, we talked about this already, about how great she was, but she also had some amazing points in this film. I think that I was reading your notes, but I saw that you talked about your favorite scene, which I think is a really good segue.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about your favorite scene.
Okay, yeah, I'll go into this. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I wrote this in my things I liked because it is mm-hmm. my favorite scene. And for me, it's the scene in the classroom when she's teaching at Juilliard. First of all, it's a really long scene. We get a lot of long scenes in this movie and a lot of long takes and long shots. Specifically in this scene, there's so many where the camera is just following her as she's, like, walking around
yep.
the room. It really shows you, like, she is in control of this room. And I think this is one of those super long, drawn-out scenes with a lot of long shots that really stands out to me. And we see that Tarr, in this moment,
mm-hmm.
she is really in her element. She's showing off everything that she knows. She's shining. She's a genius. Like, she's showing off that she's a genius. Kind of putting these students to shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the peak for her. It's her... She's in her element, quite literally. And you feel like you're with her the entire time. And the scene is silent and it's long, but it feels very intense.
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of at the edge of your seat the whole time. And you're like, this is, like, uncomfortable but invigorating.
Exactly.
And there's, like, an echo in the room. So, like, her voice is echoing throughout the space. It's just, like, this is her space. This is her moment. And she is fucking killing it.
Yeah. And you have the student, too. I think what also makes us a little nervous while we're watching it is he's, like, shaking his leg. Because he's
yes.
nervous in
yeah,
her presence.
He's like...
Because she keeps challenging him. And his leg is shaking. And you're like, oh, my God. You feel, like, how nervous he is. Because I would be nervous in that situation, too. But what I loved most about this part was her monologue that was basically anti-cancel culture. Because the kid, I can't remember his name. But he said he hated Bach because Bach was a misogynist, like he couldn't take him seriously. So Lydia basically says that artists should only be graded on their talent, not on the irrelevant aspects of their life that has nothing to do with their work. And as an audience, we agree with her. We're like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Why would we grade an artist on something that has nothing to do with what they had done? So you leave that saying, so what if Bach was a misogynist, right? But later the film proves that it's more complex than that. Because in the end, Lydia is a grooming abuser, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, that doesn't inherently have to do with her music. but it had to do with her career because of who she was doing it to. She was doing it to the women who basically worked for her. Therefore, it affects her career negatively because she abused her power as a maestra because she groomed young women in the industry.
Yeah, and she was stepping on other people to get to where she was.
Exactly.
And abusing her power.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mentioned that too. You know, in this moment, this is a very big moment of power for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a power trip in a way. But then it kind of comes back to bite her in the end.
Exactly.
That moment of power becomes a very strong moment of weakness for her when we realize what happens later on.
Yeah.
And it sort of tears her apart.
Exactly.
And it's also kind of this, like, good foreshadowing moment. And it puts it in perspective in your head, in our own heads, too, like you said, because in this moment, we're like, yes, she's right. Like,
she's correct.
Like, she knows what she's talking about. She's seasoned in this business. She knows what's up. And then later on, everything else just kind of crumbles, and it makes mm-hmm. us rethink our own position on the whole thing. And I also think that this scene especially is a really good comparison on, like, age, like, the differences between generational perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have her, you know, she's representing an older figure in this community, in this business, versus the new generation. And I think that that type of conversation is so societally relevant right now. Yeah, it's just this, like, differing perspectives between the old generations and the new generations.
Exactly.
Which I love this scene so much. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think that's another beautiful aspect of this movie, is that a lot of the film and television that we see now that covers political correctness and cancel culture are really unrelatable and cringy. Like, we can't take them seriously at all, because they either make our generation as Gen Z look like fools, or they just don't address it correctly. It's completely wrong. But this is the first time I've actually agreed with the way they portrayed the kind of disintegration of a career, because it shows the complexity of what happens when you do something wrong and the consequences you have to face. Because I think that we live in a society right now, I just use that terrible line, we live in a society. We live in a society.
No one's faulting you. No one's faulting you for that.
Where, you know, cancel culture is very cut and dry. Somebody does something wrong, their career is over. You know what I mean? But in this movie, we get to see really what happens to somebody when they do the things that they do, if that makes sense. And I also admire the fact that it's up to the viewer to decide if Lydia is bad or not. It's not anybody, like, I don't think that the director ever makes it out to seem like Lydia is a terrible human being. You know what I mean? We watch everything unravel, and it's up to us to say if she's bad or not.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't really think about that.
You know?
Because they do give her, like, redeemable qualities.
Right. She's a good mother.
Yeah, and
she's, like, she's all these things.
Smart. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think she's a bad person?
I don't know. I feel like people are too complex to basically say that she's a terrible person. You know what I mean? I think she deserved what she got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
I guess she is kind of she's a bad person. You know what I mean? But, like, it's that thing that we're talking about where it's like you want to believe in her.
I know.
And it's hard to say that she's a bad person because you see her relationship with her daughter and you see her talent and you see everything that she probably had to overcome to get there. But then you're like, damn it. Look at what she did.
And, like, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's really, and it's like repeated behavior, right? We see her just, she has no remorse for what she's doing.
Exactly.
And I think she's forced to face that.
That's the thing.
But, like, we realize that this wasn't a one-time scenario where, you know, she had a relationship with one of her assistants and the power dynamic was dangerous and she abused it. And then, you know, she never did it again. We see that this is something that she literally does a lot.
She does it a
and
lot.
And not only did it lead to someone's suicide, but even when, like, even with that knowledge, she still continues, ugh. It's a lot.
I really like this part of the New York Times review that I'm going to read, but it basically said, it invites you to think hard about Lydia, about the meaning of her work and the consequences of her actions, about whether she is someone you should admire or revile, about whether artists should be judged by their work or by how they live their lives. In different contexts, Lydia herself argues both sides of that question, as many of us do. and to search the movie for a consistent argument is to miss the point and fall into a category error, misconstruing the extraordinary coup that Field and Blanchett have pulled off. We don't care about Lydia Tarr because she's an artist. We care about her because she's art. Isn't that such a good...
That's so good. It sums it up so well.
It shows that a person is too complex. You know what I mean? I don't know how to like even form my own argument about it, because it's just so much to think about. Yeah. About the actual realities of how we see celebrities and how we see artists.
And it's weird because I kind of hate myself for partly wanting to love her.
Right.
Knowing what she's done. But you are put in this position where you like kind of love her. It's exactly like that article says, where it's like you can't come to a concrete conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's impossible to look at a person and decide exactly. Something very binary.
And I think this whole film, the entire, if you can sum up the concept of this film in a question, it's that question we hear all the time of, can you separate art from artist
mm-hmm.
when they do these kinds of things? Would it be wrong then, if I lived in this universe, for me to listen to Lydia Tarr's music ever again? This is something I also liked. This film is about the grooming and abuse of young women in the industry, but it doesn't explicitly show the suffering of women, which I feel like in a lot of movies where that's at the forefront, it would show us the abuse, and it would kind of put the victims on display in some kind of glorification of their suffering in a way. I see this a lot in movies where if a woman is abused, we have to see the graphic display of her in that situation. But Tarr doesn't do that because it doesn't have to, right? It just kind of tells us that Lydia did something bad and we are left to think about ourselves instead of having to see it for ourselves.
And like they allude to it enough. Like we can fill in the gaps as to what's happening, but we don't have to actually see it. And I think the other thing that was intentional about this, you know, we are so much in the present in this movie.
Right.
It never shows us the past. It alludes mm-hmm. to the moments of the past, but it's never like showing us anything that happens in the past because we are living through the present and we're living through Lydia's perspective.
Right.
And one of the things I kind of love that this movie did was the moment that Francesca quits,
mm-hmm.
we never see her again.
Nope.
And the reason we don't is because we are Lydia Tarr in this movie.
Yeah.
And Lydia Tarr never sees her again, and so we don't ever see her again.
She doesn't
and
exist
I think
anymore.
It's a great way to put us in that like perspective of us being Lydia Tarr in this movie.
Exactly. Exactly. I actually never thought about it until right now, but the fact that Lydia, we never see her showing remorse for what she did, ever.
You're right, she doesn't.
So maybe would we feel bad for her or more bad for her if she was sorry? She never was. She denied it until the end, that she never did those things, that everything was misconstrued.
That's so frustrating.
I know, even when she was talking to Sharon and Sharon was like, every relationship you've ever had is transactional, I don't even think she said anything.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think she did.
Oh, now my opinion on Lydia is changing. See, like, the more you think about it, guys, there's just so much in this movie. Here's a question. If Cate Blanchett did not play Lydia Tarr, would you still like her?
I can't with this performance. It's spectacular.
It's incredible.
The first scene, when it's just her, and she's got these, like, she's, like, making these, like, weird expressions on her face. All right.
Yeah.
Give her the Oscar, everyone.
I know. She does, like, she does the blinking, and she does, like, the, and then she, like, swipes her hands. Like, what is that?
And
it's, like, a ritual for her.
And, you know, obviously, Cate Blanchett's not a conductor.
No.
I mean, I don't know if she knows how to play the piano or she actually knows anything about music, but she freaking makes you believe she does in this movie.
I need to Google that.
Like... And I'm pretty sure I read something that said that the director, like, made this movie with her in mind.
Yeah.
That he the role was basically made for her.
Mm-hmm.
And damn well feels like it was, because she does an amazing job.
She learned how to play the piano and to conduct for this movie.
That's devotion, people.
She it's worked. Incredible. Wow. But still, I would assume that she maybe had a little bit over a year to do all that.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I think...
Who else could have played this role, though?
I don't know. Who? Who could have done it like Cate Blanchett? Cate Blanchett is a powerhouse. I think that, like, now she's getting the recognition she deserves, I feel like. but she's always been, I feel like she's still kind of underrated. I feel like this will be the...
Oh, this is her career.
I said it was her magnum opus. I did. Maybe. I don't know if you've ever seen Blue Jasmine, but it's very good. It's like an incredible movie. I said I need to watch that again to make sure. But this may be it. And she also like speak. I don't speak German, but she spoke it really well.
Yes, yes.
And she speaks it a lot. And the way like she even, and this goes also, I think, to Todd Field for writing an amazing script. But the way that she goes from speaking to English to German in like the same sentence, like so seamlessly. Like, she'll finish the sentence with German, start it with English.
Mm-hmm. Which is and it's exactly just like, it seems like such. Bilingual people.
Yeah. It seems so natural. I also said that Noémie Merlant did a really good job, too. She's the one who plays Francesca, the assistant. She, and the reason why, I already knew her from A Portrait of a Lady on Fire, if you've seen that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I thought that her performance was so amazing because it relied a lot on body language. I don't think she had a lot of lines in this, but you could see like the way she would think because her eyes would like go back and forth and the way that she would like duck her head and things like that. So you could really see as she would lose faith in Lydia throughout the film when everything went down with Krista Taylor, who we haven't talked about yet in this entire thing. We haven't even talked about Krista Taylor, guys.
I know. Ugh.
Krista.
We talk about how we know who she is, even though she's never in the movie.
She's never in the movie.
It's great.
The only time we ever get to see her, maybe, because don't know. We actually don't know if this is intentionally her because we only see her in a dream sequence. So in my opinion, it's like it might be Krista Taylor, but also this girl has red hair and so does Lydia Tarr's next victim, I guess. I don't want to call her a victim, but that's Olga, too. Mm-hmm. Olga has red hair, but we see that dream sequence that's supposed to be Krista Taylor. It's kind of like, is that what she's supposed to look like?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be her. Don't they like show a picture of her at some point? And then she shows up in the dream sequence and you're like...
They do show a picture of her, huh?
I think they do.
Yeah,
so I think it is supposed to be her.
I said, Krista Taylor, rest in peace, but also you're an icon.
Yeah, really.
She, I don't know how to say this word, so if I butcher it, sorry, posthumously took Lydia down after she died.
It's like, it's so tragic.
I know, it is so sad. Seeing all those emails of Lydia being like, don't.
Don't hire her.
Don't hire
her.
Ugh. Don't take her under.
And it like goes to show how easy it is for people in power to literally ruin other people's lives for no absolute reason.
Exactly.
And it's the ultimate tragedy. Mm-hmm. And it's true.
Exactly.
It's so true. It happens in the real world. And it's heartbreaking.
I think the biggest badass move was the gift that she sent her, and it was the book called The Challenge.
I didn't get that super well.
Because it's so quick in the movie where she opens the gift in the airport bathroom, and it's called The Challenge. And then she opens it up, and it has the author's name scribbled out, but I couldn't read what it said.
Yeah,
but I assumed it had to be Krista, but I had it confirmed when I read.
Oh, okay.
Reviews.
Yeah, yeah, because I remember that part, but I wasn't able... I also, too, I was, like, trying to read the page, and I was like, wait, what am I supposed to be looking at here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just kind of missed it. Who was the gift from?
It was from Krista.
Oh, it was?
It was from Krista, and it was called The Challenge. And then she would... I think it was probably, like, a couple days later.
Wow.
That she was dead, unfortunately.
That is intense.
I think it's, like... It's really upsetting because when the news breaks, you have this scene with Francesca where she is in Lydia's office and she says, I need to be held or something. And then that's when Lydia's like, this is not the place for that. So you already know that Francesca is also in that position where like she has some kind of sexual relationship with Lydia, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And she reveals that Krista had committed suicide. And... Francesca's crying and Lydia's like, you have to forget about her. You have to forget about her.
Like she's nothing.
Like she wasn't even human. Oh my God, Lydia. Lydia. The only way that she could have ever, well, good thing she didn't because she got what she deserved, but the only way she could have prevented this from happening is if she made Francesca, the second conductor.
Well, and it shows how truly blinded she is by her own power.
Exactly.
She thinks she's untouchable.
She isn't untouchable. What else did I say? Oh, I said that it passes the Bechdel test.
Yes.
God bless.
Seriously?
Which I also, is that how you say that? I always
say Bechdel, I think.
Bechdel? Okay. So it requires at least one instance in a film where two women speak to each other about something that not having to do with a man.
Wow.
Yeah. Ugh, because they don't really talk about men in this movie at all. It's really very women.
Which
forward.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's another thing also, like, it has a lesbian lead character, but the entire film isn't about her being a lesbian.
Yes.
Because every lesbian film, right, we need to see the discovery, the coming out, the, like, facing heteronormativity, but Lydia's already grounded in her sexuality. She's already married. She already has a child.
She's just a lesbian.
She's just a lesbian.
And
it's cool.
Doesn't really affect her.
I respect that.
At all.
It's really good. It's really nice to see. I love that.
I did read a review that was, like, I forget exactly what it said, but it was like, can't we have a lesbian movie that doesn't have the lesbian wearing ugly shoes or something?
I loved all of her shoes.
Oh, did you?
And her, what bad shoes was she wearing?
I didn't even remember, but I thought the review was funny.
That was another thing. Lydia...
I think it said, like, just because Lydia's a lesbian doesn't mean she has to wear ugly shoes.
Wait, now I need to know.
I don't even remember what the shoes looked like. I just thought that was funny.
I just remember her wearing, like, dress shoes. You know what I mean? Just some, like,
Yeah, I mean,
Oxfords.
I think she wears, like, normal shoes.
I can't see anything in stills. But her suits?
Oh, my gosh.
Incredible. She has them handmade. They're all amazing. Except for the suit that she wears in the classroom at Juilliard. It was all oversized. I was like, you need to hem those pants, girl. Please. Yeah. I'm going to go through the symbols.
Please.
Time.
Take it away. Talk about time.
Time is a big deal in this movie. And the reason why I recognized time was because I told Haley this reminds me of a movie I'd seen before called Opening Night. There's a lot of similarities, but Opening Night talks about that kind of the main character in Opening Night is an aging actress who turns into a belligerent alcoholic. She faces the death of her youth when she's haunted by a young girl who resembles herself embodying her younger self. So it's kind of like Age and Time are the similar aspects between these two movies. So I think immediately because I recognize that, I realize the symbol of time in Tar. And I think the biggest aspect in this movie regarding time is the dissonant sounds throughout the entire film, where we hear the banging on the door, we hear the metronome going on out of nowhere, the sound from the fridge. And it's at when Lydia had talked about how important time is in music, how everything needs to be, like, perfect. We see all of these different sounds that come out of nowhere that take her out of her focus. And it kind of shows the breaking point in every little aspect of the movie. The metronome going out of nowhere. The slight buzzing of the fridge. Mm-hmm. Somebody banging on the door. All of these things. And at the beginning, she also says that she believes in a perfect marriage of past and present because she refuses to live completely in the past. But as you said, the past catches up to her and ruins her life.
Yeah, and it's like she wants there to be a perfect marriage between the past and the present. Uh-huh. Well, okay, if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get. And the past and the present is going to converge, and it's going to catch up with you, and it's going to ruin your life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And yeah, I didn't even... When you texted me, we were text chatting about this a couple days ago, and when you, like, texted me about the concept of time, a light bulb in my brain.
Yeah.
I hadn't even made the connection, and then you brought it up, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was like, time is so important to
and
this.
And I think I also had a feeling that that would be a big part of it, because I also do play music in the real world. So I know how important time is to the aspect of music. So since this is a movie about music, I knew it had to be important, no doubt. And yeah, I think that it absolutely was, for sure. I think that was the only big symbol. There was the mandala, or like that sketch that she kept seeing, but I still don't understand that.
Yeah, that's one of those things I didn't really understand. I think it probably had something to do with...
Trapped. I don't know, because it looked like a maze, didn't it?
Yeah, and it was definitely something traumatizing for her. Every time she saw it, she kind of freaked out. And there's, like, a lot of symbols that aren't really explained, like why she's holding on to this other apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Because the wife mentions it. She's like, you refuse to give up that old apartment or something, and which is a thing of her past, which has to do with time.
Even though she doesn't want to live in the past. Which one is it, Lydia?
Yeah, but we never really understand why she's holding on to that apartment so much.
There's the neighbors, too.
Yeah.
She has these neighbors where it's a, I don't know. I would assume that there's something going on with the younger woman in that apartment. I don't know if she's mentally ill or if she, what's going on, but she's supposed to be taking care of her mother. But in the end, it turns out that she had neglected her mother and she ends up in jail. And I think it represents the fact that because just like the woman neglects her mother, who's an elder, it's like Lydia neglecting her future and like taints her reputation. Mm-hmm. What else did you say? You made a really good point about the neighbors.
The neighbors thing was interesting. And because there's like, it's very brief. And Lydia like goes into their apartment at one point to help pick up the mother off of the floor because she's like fallen. Just the stark difference between the way that that apartment looks and the apartment that Lydia lives in looks.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I like really thought about it, you know, this movie is so rooted and takes place in a very rich upper class environment. You know, Lydia's a rich, famous person. She lives in a beautiful... She has two apartments, first of all, just because she can. Both of them are beautiful. And I think that this moment with the neighbors kind of takes us out of that space and reminds us that in the real world, there's actually deeper and more important things going on and, like, things that other people who aren't rich and upper class have to struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has to take care of her mother. Maybe she has, like you said, some sort of mental illness. She ends up going to jail.
Yeah.
Which, if we think about it, is a lot more tragic of a story than what actually happens to Lydia. And so it kind of puts you into perspective to be like, okay, this is kind of a privileged, story that we're experiencing.
Exactly.
And it's still a worthwhile story to hear, but it's just, like, a nice reminder that, you know, there are things going on outside of this sort of upper class classical music environment that we have to remember still exist. I like it. I think it's cool.
I think so, too.
And
you also see the, like, blatant disrespect that Lydia has, because what does she do right after she goes and helps that grandmother? The old lady, she goes back to her apartment and takes off her clothes and throws them away.
Ugh.
She's like disgusted by
like,
it.
Ooh, like she had to cross that boundary between rich and not rich, like rich and poor. She had to physically cross that boundary and like interact with non upper class super fancy people.
Mm-hmm.
And to her, it's gross.
Yeah,
she's so frustrating.
She just threw her shirt away.
And
rude.
And then there's that other scene where the real estate people come by and they like knock on the door and they're like, oh, like we just heard your music. And Lydia's like, oh, well, thank you so much. And they're like, oh, actually, we're trying to avoid it because it's too much noise.
And it scare off buyers.
Puts that thought in your brain where you're like, oh, yeah, this story is told in an environment where like Lydia's amazing. She's a beautiful artist, which is true.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that's not the only perspective to have.
And nobody wants to listen to that all the time. And I think Lydia has that. She believes that everybody wants to listen to her at every given moment, but nobody does. Because who would?
I don't know. Important things even, to worry about sometimes.
Even if my downstairs neighbor was playing my favorite songs all the time, I would still want them to shut up.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
You know? Like, a moment's quiet. Please. I think that was everything I had. Did you have any other?
No, I think that we covered all of it and
more.
Oh
my goodness. We really did. A lot.
Yeah, it's just so much. So
I know.
Should we get into maybe some of the things we didn't like?
Yeah.
Would you like to start us off?
I thought that there were some important aspects that were rushed in this.
Mm-hmm.
We're never told blatantly that Lydia was fired, I don't think. There's like there's a conversation that she has with Elliot, but it's never said like, you don't have the job anymore. And then all of a sudden we're waiting for her to walk on stage and then she just attacks Elliot because he's the conductor now. And I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
When did this happen?
Yeah, that scene is really good.
Uh-huh.
But it's also confusing.
Exactly. It really is.
Because if she was fired, why did they even let her show up?
I know.
She's, like, tailored in this, like, beautiful conductor's suit.
Mm-hmm.
She's standing on the side, or, like, side of the stage. Like, she's ready to go on and perform. And instead, she, like, rushes onto the stage and tackles Elliot. And you're kind of like, what?
The only thing I could think of was the symphony wanting to protect their own reputation. So they just temporarily replaced her.
Mm.
So that's why she got to be there. And she wasn't actually fired. Well, she's fired now, for sure, for attacking him, but yikes, yikes. How about it being too long?
Yeah, that was my first one too.
Yeah, that, I don't know. It has a runtime of 2 hours and 38 minutes, which honestly, I've seen movies that are longer, but just the way that this is made, it feels just too long. Like there's three lunch scenes or lunch and dinner scenes that have 15-minute conversations.
Yeah, it's not only is it a slow burn, but it's a long slow burn.
Yeah,
which is kind of like a double, like it's, yeah, it doubles down to make it a little bit of a slog sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I said that it could have easily been just as fulfilling if it was just 2 hours long. Like, even if they just cut it down. Even if it was 2 hours and 15 minutes, it would be fine. But I just think... I also said the ending with Lydia going to Southeast Asia felt a little like Whiplash. Kind of, because we just didn't really understand it at first.
Yeah, it takes a little while before you realize what's going on.
It does. I feel like it was just kind of like she was in New York and then all of a sudden she's there. Yeah. What else do you have?
I agree with you about it being too long. And I, as part of that, I talked about the dinner scenes, especially because a lot of the time you kind of don't even really understand what they're talking about.
Exactly, that jargon.
Yeah,
oh my God.
And it's just like, you're like, are they speaking a foreign language?
She's like, are they even speaking English right now? They're talking about movements and time signatures and free Boeing or something like that.
I couldn't even tell you what they were talking about.
What does it mean?
And so, yeah, for some of those, the entire point was lost on me. I think, and with that, I think the movie tries to be a little bit too intelligent sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it purposely wants us to not understand what they're talking about sometimes, which, like, kind of annoys me because it just feels like... Sometimes even the movie feels a little bit pretentious, just in, like, the way they use the language and how long it is. It just felt a little bit too over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. There was aspects where it was absolutely doing that. And I think the jargon goes into that, too, where it's like, are some of these things necessary, you know?
It's like they wanted to kind of show off that they did their research, and it was like, we get it, like
we get it, like
you don't
I
have
guess,
to go too far.
I guess there's gonna be the 1% of people seeing this movie who are really going to like be like, yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. But to the common viewer,
this is kind of, I have like a, it's a critique that other people have had of this movie that I kind of wanted to talk about because it's a critique that annoys me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea of factual inaccuracy.
I didn't notice this at all.
I didn't notice
obviously,
any.
Obviously, we've just talked about how we don't
have the mental knowledge of the classical music industry to know this. But I read some reviews that were like, this movie got so many things wrong about the orchestra, blah, blah. And like, I don't know. The review itself felt pretentious to me. It was like this person was trying to show off how much they know, that like they are better at music than this movie. And I was kind of like, look, when you watch a movie, you have to have the willingness to suspend your disbelief to a certain degree. Because obviously, when a director makes a movie, the one thing that they're an expert in is making movies. So you can't expect them to be an expert in every other thing that they decide to make a movie about.
Exactly.
And so the goal and what we should expect is for directors and producers and people who write and make movies to do their research enough to know what they're talking about, but also to, you know, be like, okay, they're not going to be perfect. They're not going to... Like, I think one of the things I read, which I don't even know if this is true, was like, oh, someone who went to Juilliard would never dislike Bach.
Right.
Like, that would just never happen. Not a student at Juilliard would never have that opinion. Like, whatever. For the point of the movie, it was necessary. So just suspend your disbelief a little bit and, you know, don't put your pretentious music perspective aside, not to be, you know, rude. But
it's how you should watch a movie about those things. It's fiction, dude.
It's for entertainment.
A different universe. Maybe in this universe, it exists in the way that they're portraying it. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like...
Don't take things so seriously.
Exactly.
Loosen up.
Like, nobody's looking at fiction movies and being like, well, dragons don't exist.
Yeah.
So we can't make...
Exactly.
Just because this movie is trying to represent reality you know, it's not going to be perfect. And no. You have to accept it for what it is. And you have to accept the fact that they did the work to make it as, like, good as they could have, given the fact that, obviously, they haven't been studying music for 25 years.
I know.
Because it's just not how it works.
I don't think a professional conductor could have made this movie. Just saying.
There you go. Perfect. So, yeah, anyway, Todd that was, like, a critique of critiques I've been seeing.
Yeah.
Round in a round, a weird roundabout way.
Meta.
Like it. But yeah, I'll get off my soapbox now.
I think that was all I had for what I didn't like. That was too long. The rushed aspects, the jargon. I didn't know what they were talking about sometimes. I think that was it. For me, at least.
I have written here... I don't know if I've changed my mind about this, though. When I was, like, reading reviews that were like, this movie is about cancel culture, I was like, no.
Yeah.
Why do we have to bring cancel culture? Because, I don't know, just the word or the term cancel culture just makes me cringe. Because I just think of, like, I don't know, cancel culture in today's day and age, like, the people will be canceled for doing, like, the dumbest, most not that bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
And it's like picking and choosing, too. Like, they cancel somebody who did something really terrible, but then there's another person who's still famous who did the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like they're picking and choosing.
And it's like, it just seems like for the purpose of stirring up drama. And so when I was reading reviews that kept mentioning cancel culture, I was kind of like, you know, I feel like I can do without that part of this movie. And, you know, they kind of sprinkled in, like, parts of the digital age. Someone recorded her and made, like, a weird, like, an edited video.
Doctored,
of her in the classroom scene that makes her look bad. I can kind of just leave that stuff out.
I completely agree with you. And I'm going to call this review out, but there's a review by Otto Straddle that literally pissed me off. I had a friend. I was like, I told her, I said, you should go watch Tar. Or I think I just, like, said that I had watched Tar. And she was like, well, I read this Otto Straddle review. I'm not quite sure what I think about it now. So I was like, oh, no. I read the Otto Straddle review. Oh, my God. I even told this friend. I was like, it made me, like, roll my eyes. Because if you read a review like that, thinking that you're going to go into a film that is completely about cancel culture in, like, the way that we see it now in modern media, it's not like that at all. And I also think that if you go into movies where, like this writer, you are going to hate an insensitive character for being insensitive, then you're going to miss the point of the movie. You know what I mean? Because the whole point is Lydia does something bad because she's the antagonist, really.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fault the bad character for being a bad person if it's the point of the movie.
Well, yeah, and you can't go into a movie... Yeah, you can't base whether or not you like a movie based on whether the protagonist is likable or not.
Yeah.
Because that's not the point of a movie.
No. But I saw that in a couple of reviews that just made me mad. So I feel like if you're going to go see this movie, go in with a opinion that doesn't think about cancel culture.
Yeah, I think if I had read reviews before I had gone to see this movie, because a lot of them, like, the first sentence is like, this movie is about cancel culture. This movie represents cancel culture. I would have not wanted to even see it because I don't like the idea of cancel culture, and I really don't think that is the main takeaway from this movie. I think it's in there, but I don't think it should be the main takeaway.
And I think that if you do go into the movie with that perception, then you are going to automatically also think about your own political correctness, and I think that you're going to fault Lydia from the beginning. You're never really going to see her as the deeply complex character that she is. You're just going to see her as somebody that I need to cancel.
Yeah, and I think you won't see her as human.
Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest things that bothers me about cancel culture is we forget that famous people who are constantly in the limelight are also human.
Yeah.
And obviously in Lydia's case, it's not a mistake that she made. It's a repeated offense.
Mm-hmm.
So we are meant to judge her and be mad at her and hate her for her actions. But I think so many times in the media, people are canceled for things that the people that are canceling them probably have done themselves.
Yeah. And it's the same people who kind of argue that we shouldn't hold celebrities on a pedestal, that we shouldn't idolize them, but then we hold them to a I don't know. We judge them more. for what they do.
And I think people who are famous need to understand.
Also,
there is
a
certain
displaying.
Level of. I'm trying to think of the right word. Like, they do have to understand that their voice means more than
exactly.
a regular person's voice, and that they have to sort of be more aware of what they're saying because they're reaching a larger audience. And that's part of, if you want to be famous and if you get to that point, you have to accept the fact that you have to be more careful with what you say and what you do because everybody is watching you.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't still be able to make mistakes every once in a while, depending
exactly.
on what the mistakes are. And I know this is kind of off the topic of the movie, but it's just, yeah, it's annoying.
It is a little annoying, but I guess the point is Tar shows us that the rise and fall of somebody who is an artist is much more complex than what we allow it to be in modern day, I guess.
Yeah, and ultimately, yeah, I see it as, you know, we got to face the consequences of our actions.
We do.
And even famous people have
Absolutely.
To do that, and even worse than the rest of us, because they had a certain level of... I still can't think of the right word. I still can't think of it.
I think I also couldn't think of the
yeah,
word.
Yeah, but it, you know, yeah, you get what we mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, should we wrap up with some final thoughts? Would
final
you like
to
start?
I think I need to see it again. I do want to see it again. What else? I thought it was a really good movie. I honestly think that it was probably up there with some of the best movies of 2022. I do think so. I think that it's something really, really special. It's one of my favorites so far of this year. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I agree with you. I will be seeing it again. I don't think I absorbed it as much as I really wanted to. This is one of those movies that really sits with you.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't, I honestly can't even stop thinking about it.
Right, same.
And again, I said this already, I'll say it again. I will never forget about Lydia Tarr.
Oh, me neither. That's
she
a good final
is,
thought.
Yeah, she is a character I will never forget. Yeah, I think that's my final. Lydia Tarr will
always be with us.
Yeah,
in some way or another, a lesson learned,
good or bad,
a
she
lesson,
will never be forgotten.
We have learned a lesson from Lydia Tarr's rise and fall.
Oh yes,
we have. What's your rating?
I gave it a strong 4 out of 5.
Good, good, good. That's very strong. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5 because that's what I gave it on Letterboxd. So
yeah, that's what I think.
I'm keeping it consistent.
Yeah, it's just so good.
It is so good. It really is good. I also didn't mention that this movie is kind of scary, too.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I was like, why did Serena not talk about how she walked out of that movie and was like, I'm so scared. This is the scariest movie I've seen all
year.
That
was my Letterboxd review. I said, why is this actually the scariest movie of 2022? It is kind of unnerving. Anyway, our next episode will be covering The Blues Brothers. We're doing a little music theme. This is one of our favorite movies, both Haley and I.
Oh my gosh, I am... so excited.
It's
you have
so
no idea
good.
How excited I am to talk about this movie. It's one of those that's like been a part of my life since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so excited to
yep.
talk about it.
Same here.
And
it's so good.
Please, please, if you take anything, and I guess maybe I should save this until we actually record that episode, but just go watch it.
Yes.
Go watch it and then come listen to our episode because you're missing out.
I know you are. You are missing out. And if it can motivate you in any way by me saying that it has a young Carrie Fisher in it, then I will
go
say
see
that.
It.
Please go see it. Thank you guys so much for listening. That wraps up our third episode.
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed listening as much as we have enjoyed talking about this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next time.
See you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.